كريم، كريم،
Good morning, Chairperson, honorable members.
Recording in progress.
Good morning, Karim. Can you start?
Yes, Chairperson, we can start.
Thank you very much. Good morning, everybody on the platform. Good morning to our members, our support staff. As I said, everybody on the platform, it's welcome. Today we are having a briefing by the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer on the request of contract deviations for the first quarter of the 2022-23 financial year. Chief Procurement Officer and your team, you are most welcome to our meeting today. But before we proceed, Darren, do we have any apologies?
Yes, Chairperson, we received apologies from Mr. Kwankwa and from Ms. Dikhale.
Okay, can you please note those apologies? Chief Procurement Officer will give you about 30 minutes to go over your presentation and your team. You decide to present first if you've got more than one presenters. And then after that, the oral members will have an opportunity to interact with your presentation. And then you will respond to whatever they would have raised. Okay. And then after that, we will deal with the minutes of the 24th and the 26th of August, then announcements and correspondence, and then we adjourn. So that's how our day is going to look like. Chief Procurement Officer, please take us through your presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Good morning, Honorable Members and the Honorable Chair. I must sort of say, just to introduce myself, as Mendon Zwashana, and we are having the presentation, and Chair, through you, we will have three presentations in terms of what you have requested, and then as you have pointed out, we'll take in questions. We are grateful that we have also received questions quite early in some areas, and then we'll also, as we are making the presentation, be able to respond to that. We will start with the transversal contracting. Can you upload, Mr. Moifo?
My apologies, ma'am. I didn't get your name again.
I am Mendo. Mendo.
Yes, yes. Okay.
Mendo and Swasana.
Okay, good.
Yes. And then we'll get Ms. Baker, and then we'll get Mr. Matebula on the trade presentation. Thank you. Over to you, Mr. Moifo, quickly. Thank you.
Thank you, and good morning, Chair, and good morning to honorable members. I'm unable to share the screen on my side because I think it has been disabled by the host. Maybe, I'm not sure if they'll be flighting it for me or they will just fix the settings so that I can flight the presentation on my side.
Chairperson, I've already met Mr. Moifo calls, so you will be able to fight it from yourself.
Thank you, Chair. I hope everyone can see my screen. Okay, good morning.
Yes. Yes, you can see our screen. Thank you.
Thank you. As a way of introduction, Chair, my name is Mutushi Moifo. I'm the Acting Chief Director at Transversal Contracting. And I'm going to present around transversal contracts. But Chair, I've noted the time limitations that you have and the number of slides that we have. I will try to make it as quick as possible for the portion that I'm...
Mr. Moifo, I think please do justice to our slides. I think we can take it up to 45 minutes of all your presentations. Right. So that's not constraining.
Thank you for that, Chair. The outline of the presentation will give you the overview of transversal contract related issues, and my other colleagues will deal with other elements in the presentation that deals with the points that are highlighted on the screen. But I'll just go straight into overview of transversal contract related issues, enrollment uptake, and all provincial and the challenges that we experience. Just to take you through the mandate of what we do at Transversal Contracting. Transversal Contracting, we are responsible for facilitating transversal term contracts. Those are contracts that we arranged on behalf of other organs of state. And we do derive our mandate from the Treasury Regulations, which is Treasury Regulation 16A 6.5. And I must point out, Chair, that participation in transversal term contracts is a voluntary measure. Voluntary, it means organs of state, they do have the power to decide whether they would like to be part of transversal term contracts or not. Therefore, it is not a mandatory that organs of state be a part of a transversal term contract. And just to take you through to the benefits of having a transversal contracting, we call ourselves transversal contracting, but in other terminology, one might refer to it as central procurement. So the benefits of central procurement in our case, Chair, it means that we would be able to standardize and consolidate state requirements where there are common goods that cut across the government institutions or organs of state with a similar specification. All what it does is that we would consolidate all our requirements, put them in one basket and approach the market in that fashion. And in that form, we would derive benefits from the concept of economies of scale. That means if you have high volumes, you are likely to achieve better pricing in the market. And also, Chair, centralizing contracts and managing them centrally, we assist in reducing the duplication of procurement efforts, in that we would arrange that contract centrally. So if I can just give an example, if we are buying vehicles as a state, you would know that all government departments, municipalities and entities will procure their vehicles. But you can imagine if each and every organ of state was procuring their own vehicles, it would be a very a tedious process. And also the market might just not be able to respond to us because we are just too many, but requiring the same thing. So one of the benefits that we have is to reduce those duplication of procurement efforts, that all organs of state or most of organs of state will be partaking in a central contract. And as I've already highlighted, that we will derive benefits from that concept of economies of scale. So what I've presented there is the structure of the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer within the National Treasury. We are made of six different chief directorates responsible for various things. But for now that I'm presenting on, I've circled our unit there, transversal contracting, that is responsible for the facilitation and management of transversal contracts that are arranged on behalf of the state. I think some of the stuff that we do, Chair, I've already highlighted, I've already mentioned them. So the next slide, Chair, is just to take you through our portfolio at transversal contracting. We at the moment manage a total number of 60 different commodities. Those 60 different commodities, they are in the health sector, they are in the fleet management, they are in agriculture and textile. We've got professional services and other commodities, education and ICT.
Mr. Moifo.
Yes, Chair.
we're not seeing your presentation. What's happening? Please flight it.
Okay, let me try to share again. It might have been moved. My apologies. Chair, I'm having challenges with sharing. Perhaps the host can assist because it looks like I've been kicked out of the sharing list or list of speakers.
Darren and Mr. Moffat, can you please?
Chairperson. Yes, he's a co-host, so I don't understand how he cannot fly, but it's fine. I will do it from my side.
Okay, please just try to.
Yeah, I'll do it from my side. It's all right, Chairperson.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, I think we can go to slide number 7. Thank you, Chair. Chair, on this slide, we are presenting our portfolio. We are currently managing 60 transversal contracts that are categorized in various sectors from health to fleet management to agriculture and textile, professional services, education and ICT and commodities. Just to show in terms of the numbers that we have, our health sector is one of our biggest commodity sector in that it amounts to 50% of our commodities, and it is followed by fleet management that is 18%, agriculture, textile, professional services, and so forth. But this amounts to just the number of contracts that we are managing. When we are saying it amounts to 50, it means half of the commodities that we manage on behalf of the departments of health and the National Department of Health. If we go to the next slide, Chair, we are just showing the different commodities by value. So if we categorize our portfolio in how I have outlined that in fleet, professional services, health, ICT, agriculture and textile and education, we would find that in terms of value, and the fleet management comes first because it amounts to 50% of the value of our commodities. It's followed by professional services at 30%, and health is at 14%, ICT and communications at 4%, agriculture and textile at 2%, and our education sector is a very small share. But I think I will touch on it as well when we go to other slides. So if we go to the following slide, Chair, in the following slide, we are highlighting, if we go to slide number 9, we are highlighting, Chair, our top 10 commodities by value. This would mean that these are the commodities that have and the highest value. Maybe the host can assist in terms of going to slide number 9. Thank you. You can see we've got, like I indicated, we've got various commodities. So what we have done on this slide, we have selected top 10 of our commodities to highlight in terms of the highest value. So one of the commodities that we have, Chair, is on the purchase of the outright purchase of vehicles by organs of state, and that is our the highest commodity in terms of value. It would mean that we have many organs of state that are partaking in that commodity in terms of buying vehicles, and it is followed by our fleet vehicle maintenance, which is the maintenance of maintenance of pool vehicles. Pool vehicles, Chair, it means vehicles that are owned by organs of state. So we do make provision for their maintenance, and we do make provision for their fuel requirements and toll requirements, that every day a state vehicle is on the road, they can be able to put fuel and all those other things. And that it just shows the order of those commodities by their value. We've got a commodity on mobile communication services, therapeutic rehabilitation equipment, surgical sundries. So here we're just giving you on a high level the top 10 commodities that are of the highest value in our portfolio of commodities. If we go to the next slide, Chair, and I think in the brief from the committee, they just needed to have a little bit of a glimpse into the support that transversal term contracts really get from organs of state. Here as well, we have selected our top 20 contracts with the highest number of participants. This means that we have mapped our contracts based on the support that they do get from the organs of state out there. Just to interpret the pie chart, Chair, is that RT15, which is the provision of mobile communication services, it means the cell phones contract, it's the one that enjoys the highest number of support from organs of state, that we have 399 organs of state that are partaking in the contract for mobile communication services. The RT57 changed the provision of vehicles. It's sitting the second in line with the 329 the participants. RT5 chair is for the provision of courier services with 191 organs of state partaking in it. And that pie chart also just goes on that list of top 20 commodities. So, Chair, I think it's evident from this picture that we do get support from organs of state with regards to transversal contracts, even though we have challenges in some areas, but overall we do have overwhelming support from organs of state in terms of participation in transversal term contracts. If we go to the next slide, Chair, in the next slide we are trying to show the committee the support that we have from the provincial departments with regards to the participation in our transversal contracts. So there we are showing you the appetite that provincial departments has in what we do at transversal contracting. So that graph or that picture there, it shows in terms of we start with RT15, of course, like I've indicated in the previous slide, that it will enjoy the most support. So you will see that there are more institutions from provincial departments that are part of our transversal contracts. I think we can go to skip slide 12 because we are just showing all the commodities that we have in the office, all of the 60 of them. And if we go to slide 14, Chair, also we are trying to provide a picture. And so if we take our entire portfolio of commodities and try to map in terms of provincial institutions that are participating in all our transversal contracts, we would find that Gauteng is the one that leads in terms of having its organs of state participating in all our 60 portfolio of commodities. It's followed by the Eastern Cape with the Eastern Cape and Limpopo province with 97 organs of state. It's followed by KwaZulu-Natal with 79, Mpumalanga with 73, Free State 65, Western Cape 63, Northwest 58. And lastly, Chair, is the Northern Cape with 46 organs of state that are in the provincial setup that are partaking in all our portfolio. And Chair, the next slide, we are just showing a list of all our commodities that we have and the value that each of that commodity has. And so that would go, Chair, up until slide 17. On slide 18, Chair, we're just showing the committee where we publish the information that we have. So, Chair, what that provides is that we'll go out on tender, we'll go through the entire evaluation process, we'll award, and after we have made that award, we will publish that award on our website for everyone to see it. That will be for the benefit of our participants and members of the public and any other company out there that is interested in our commodities. They will be able to go through what we provide there on our website to see the number of contracts that we have, to see the pricing that we have on various commodities. And Chair, we go to an extent that on a continuous basis where we've got amendments to our contracts. Amendments, it could be things such as the price adjustments that will take place during the tenure of a contract. We'll also put that information on our website. It's unfortunate that I can't fly, Chair. I would have liked to just navigate around the website so that members can go through to our website just to see what we have there. If you go to the next slide, Chair, after clicking on the transversal contract there where it's selected on the screen, you will see the commodity number and description. And then if you go on the far right, you'll see where it says amendments on our website. And if you click there, you'll be able to see the different amendments that we put on our various commodities. And if you go to the next slide, Chair, we're just showing that if you need to get in contact with us, if you are an organ of state or you are a company who would like to do business with our transversal contracting unit, our contact details are provided there so that we can be able to be of assistance. The next slide, Chair, is slide 21. We just deal with the challenges that we encounter when we facilitate transversal term contracts. Is that we would sometimes get late participation requests from organs of state. So it means when we go out on tender, what we do is that we sensitize organs of state that we are intending going out to the market on this particular commodity. Therefore, the organs of state, they must indicate if they've got interest in partaking in that contract. So what we have is that in those initial stages, organs of state will hold back and not indicate their participation request. And only when we have finalized the process, we have awarded, and we have published the information on our website, then we start getting what we call post-award participation requests after the contract has been put in place. So that is it's one of the challenges that we are encountering, that if we can get, for example, in the RT15, where there are 399 participants, if we can get that number when we go out on tender, we'll even derive more benefits, because we go out with a few number of participants, but when the contract progresses, there's a large number that trickles in. If we can just go back to slide 21, Chair. So I think one of the other challenges is that there's lack of integrated reporting system, that when there's a specific report that is required, we can just quickly go into that system and be able to generate that data with ease. For example, I will not be able to tell you the number of vehicles that are bought, for example, in the Northern Cape in the past 3 months, without me having to ask for specific institution in that province to help with that information. But had we had an integrated reporting system, I could be able just to generate that report and present it with ease. And one other issue that we have is inconsistent budget commitments. You will find that an institution will come and say, we'll be spending X amount of money on this commodity for the duration of that contract. And in some cases, you'll find that particular organs of state will go over and above what they have committed on in terms of what they provide us when we onboard them on the contract. Or sometimes they would spend far less than what they have committed to spend on when it comes to the transversal contract. And also, Chair, the issue of late payments. This one we cannot really emphasize it enough, that would in most instances find our small service providers that are in transversal contracts complaining to us that institutions are just taking time to pay them, particularly in instances where there are no there are no challenges around the details of billing. When I say the challenge around the details of billing is that the organ of state has no objection to what has been billed, but the payment the does not come forth. And one other thing, Chair, is the lack of participation on support for the education-related commodities. We do have a directorate that is dedicated to support the education sector, but we do struggle to get support from the provincial departments of education in terms of partaking in those commodities. But in terms of the intervention where we do have those challenges, we would escalate the matter through our DG to the DG of the other organ of state, particularly with the education portfolio. We've already escalated that matter and the interventions that are taking place at the DG level to make sure that we do get support, or if we can't get support there, we see how we can organize ourselves, because it is a challenge to dedicate resources to a certain a sector but not getting the support from there. So, Chair, I think the other one there is the user interactions that we do have with regards to issues of time as payments, particularly to undisputed invoices, because we do understand if you raise a dispute on an invoice, it might take time for you to pay because you must be sure of what you are paying for. Chair, the next slide, the opportunities, Chair, that we can get out of the transversal contracting space is that there is appetite from other organs of state to get assistance from us. I think at the moment we've got 6 commodities that we are interacting with different organs of state to see if we can arrange them as transversal term contracts. But the challenge there, Chair, with taking new commodities is that we don't want to take too many commodities and then we end up in a situation where we start eroding capacity in other organs of state because we would have taken everything and centralized it as national treasure. And also we don't want to take too many commodities and due to the limitation of warm bodies, we are unable to put them in place timeously. So we are very cautious in terms of taking too many new projects, but we at the moment we've got 6 that we are looking at taking to arrange as transversal term contracts. That will be the end of my presentation, Chair, and thank you for the opportunity. And I think I will take questions from here. Thank you. Chair, I've completed with regards to the transversal contracting section. I'm not sure if I will take questions now or will let my other colleagues present and then we'll take questions at a later stage. Thank you.
No. Let's have all the presentation from the OCPO. Once all of you have finished, then it's the only then that will come in, eh? So continue, OCPO. And once all of you have made presentation, then you'll bring my meeting back to me. Thank you.
Good morning, Chairperson. The next presentation will be presented by myself, but I request, Chairperson, that we skip the slides up to, I think, slide number 36, where I will continue with the presentation on the deviations and contract modification. Thank you very much. Chairperson, my name is Basali Baker, and I am the Chief Director for SCM Governance, Monitoring and Compliance, which is the Chief Directorate that deals with the issues of deviations and contract modifications by the organs of state, amongst other things. For this presentation, Chairperson, we have focused just purely on the deviations and the contract modifications and the profile of companies that benefited from these deviations and contract modifications. Next slide. I don't have control, yes. So as part of this presentation, Chairperson, we're going to address in four parts. I'm going to firstly deal with the legislative environment that deals with issues of deviations and contract modification, because there has been quite a significant change in that space in the past couple of months. Then I'm going to go into the specific details of the deviations and the contract modifications, but they are also broken into two. Because within the quarter one, there's a period where the deviations and the contract modifications were done according to an old instruction note, and then then later on a new instruction note was put in place in the revision of the old one. And then part three, we're going to deal with some technical assessment that the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer has done on the reporting on these matters, and then we're then going to conclude with the with the profile or the imperatives on Black women, women, Black people, and youth in the companies that benefited from these deviations and contract modification. Next slide. Next slide. Thank you. Chairperson, in terms of the legislative framework, the PFMA provides for different instruments for organs of states that they can apply to ensure that they take what we call a differentiated procurement, meaning that they apply the most appropriate procurement a method for their requirements. Some of the requirements that they have are so complex such that the normal procurement processes do not yield the desired outcome in terms of service providers or suppliers for this for their specification. We have exemptions in terms of Section 92 of the PFMA, which are considered by the Minister of Finance for approval, but that would be for specific provisions within the PFMA and the Treasury regulations that the organs of state are not able to comply with because of the complexities of their procurement. But we also then have Section 76 of the PFMA that provides that National Treasury must make regulations and issue instructions applicable to the departments in terms of the PFMA. Section 6.2 of the PFMA then further provide that National Treasury must prescribe the uniform treasury norms and standards that will assist the organs of state to comply with the legislative framework. With those provisions, Chairperson, National Treasury has issued Instruction Note 3 of 2016-17 and PFMA Instruction Note 3 of 2021 and 2022. In the previous years, from 2016 to 2017, the instruction note required or gave accounting officers powers to implement deviations from normal procurement processes and approve those deviations in two instances. In instances where it is a sole supplier and when it is an emergency. Within that instruction note, it prescribed that then any other deviation would then be considered or would need require prior approval from the relevant treasury before it can be implemented. So for national departments and entities, National Treasury was the relevant treasury, and then for provincial departments and their provincial entities, it would be the provincial treasuries who would be the relevant treasuries in that and in that case. The instruction note in itself presented a number of challenges that the organs of state found to be impeding in their ability to deliver on services that warranted over time that we look at the instruction note and make sure that we issue the instruction note in the matter that is enabling for organs of state to be agile and to be able to respond to the market in the most appropriate manner to make sure that they can secure services and goods critical for service delivery. We then revised the instruction note 3 of 2016-17 and issued a new instruction note on the 30th of March 2022 to be applicable immediately, meaning the 1st of April 2022, which is in the form of instruction note 3 now of 2021-2022. What the instruction note 3 of 2021-2022 intended to do is to give back the powers to the accounting officers to say, without the National Treasury involvement in the procurement process in terms of the deviations and the contract modification, but require the accounting officer to put in place measures to strengthen that those processes through their SEM policies and procedures and put controls to make sure that the system within the organs of state themselves are not abused and for them to only be detected at National Treasury level. And therefore, we remove the link that where National Treasury is involved in the processes, but then we focus the National Treasury's efforts insofar as this, these deviations and contract modifications are concerned on the monitoring part. So we monitor the accounting officers and the accounting authorities implementation of the deviations and contract modifications. Similarly, insofar as contract modifications are concerned, previously within prescribed thresholds, I think it was 15% or 15 million for goods and services and 20% or 20 million for construction related goods or projects, they were required to come to National Treasury for prior approval to be able to modify the contract above those thresholds. Within the new instruction note, the accounting officers have been given the mandate to consider and approve all the contract modifications irrespective of the threshold. However, when they reach those set thresholds, which is still similar to the ones that were set by the old instruction note, then we require them to report those contract modifications to the accountant, to the auditor general, as well as the relevant treasury for monitoring purposes. Next slide. So I've already gone through the old instruction note has provided, Chairperson. I will not repeat it. As I've mentioned that in this new instruction note, we've just expanded it a little bit more to require the accounting officers to put more measures in place to control and curb the abuse of the SCM system through their SCM policies and procedures and making sure that they set the circumstances and methods of procurement that are allowable or are most appropriate for that organ of state, depending on its complexities and the market and the industry that it operates in, that would be relevant for them to be able to deliver on the services. Next slide. Therefore, in terms of this instruction note, the reporting requirements for the accounting officers and the accounting authority is to report within 14 days that they have implemented a deviation, which in this instruction note we have termed procurement by other means, and to the auditor general. But for contract modification, and you can move to the next slide. For contract modification, we then put a reporting requirement for the accounting officers and accounting authorities to report within 30 days. But we will see as well within that instruction note that's provided in the presentation, we have also put some more controls or measures or requirements for accounting officers to strengthen their processes of modifying contracts to make sure that they do not continue benefit benefiting the same service providers unnecessarily and not implement procurement processes. Next slide. Right. So those are the two differences between the old instruction note and the new instruction note. As a result, Chairperson, the presentation that we're going to go to, or I'm going to provide as we move along, you will see that the statistics for the deviation, we first focus on the last part of the deviations, or the last numbers of deviations that came to the National Treasury for consideration in terms of the old instruction notes, and we close them off because they still follow half a bit of them in the first leg of quarter one, and then the other leg of quarter one of the new financial year. Then we have the deviations that have been conducted in terms of the new instruction notes, where the organs of state then, once they have implemented the deviation processes, they then report it to National Treasury. Next slide. Thank you. So, Chairperson, I will start with the presentation on the first deviation based on the old instruction note. And this information you will also find the detail in the deviation folder that we submitted to the committee, where, as we've always previously done, when we present the deviations and contract modification for a quarter, we would provide the committee with the requests from the organs of state, as well as the responses from the organs of state. So those details have been provided and they are available. Next slide. In terms of the numbers, Chairperson, you will see that the number of deviations that we considered within that period, which is the 16th of March up until the end of March, when the new instruction note was then issued, is that we had a total number of 67 deviations. The total sum of expenditure for the 67 deviation is the 3 billion as provided on the table above the graphics. And you will note that, Chairperson, out of the total number of 67, we have reported on the top 10 of those deviations. Previously, we would do the top 20, Chairperson, because the top 20 would be the largest contributor to the deviations. In this case, I think we actually took just about everything and we put it on to close because the numbers were minimal. So what you see there is everything that would have been there. And you would see that, Chairperson, that the top 20 of the government institutions in terms of the old instruction note constitutes about 55%, and the other values only constitute about 45% of the total deviations that close off this quarter. Next slide. And then out of the total number of deviations of the top 20, Chairperson, out of the 3 billion, we have the ones that are listed there as the top implementers of this deviation, with number one being DC, Department of Communications and Technology, where they implemented a deviation for 2.5 billion in the appointment of broadband infrastructure and Centec to provide a broadband infrastructure to about 5.8 million households from the 1st of April 2022 to the 1st of March 2023. National Treasury conditionally supported this deviation with the condition that the department needed to ensure that there were no service providers that were going to be prejudiced by the transaction, and that this transaction would be cost effective for the department to approach the procurement in this manner. Then the next one, Chairperson, we have the RTMC, which spent about 145 million. And this deviation specifically, Chairperson, it was a reporting of a deviation rather than a request for deviation from National Treasury, because the RTMC was appointing the South African Post Office in this case, because the South African Post Office is a sole supplier of the delivery of online renewed driver's license cards, and therefore RTMC could not approach any other. There is no other service provider in the market to provide these services because of Section 15 of the Postal Services Act. Therefore, when it is the sole suppliers are provided in the old instruction note, the accounting officers or the accounting authority had the mandate to approve these deviations. The third one, Chairperson, is a procurement from SANSA for 114 million. The procurement from SANSA for the 114 million, Chairperson, consists of two deviations specifically. One amounting to 2.7 million, which was requested for appointment of KIT Group Finance Chairperson as the only service provider for exhibition of services of the SANSA in a conference that was held in Paris in September, and therefore they could not appoint any other service provider. However, this came to National Treasury as a request because the provision of the services that KIT Group provides or needs to provide for SANSA they are not the only provider in the market. There are other providers in the market, but because of how the conference in the way it is structured and how it is contracted with all the participants, they have to go through the selected or the preferred provider by the conference organizers. SANSA had to do a single source deviation to appoint SANSA to make sure that they go and present and represent South Africa in that conference, Chairperson. So National Treasury supported that deviation. The second deviation was for various services for the implementation of Digital S Africa through novation of existing contracts between Geoscience Australia and 15 other service providers and the implementing partners at an estimated total cost of 111 million. National Treasury did not support this deviation because there was a bid that had already been awarded, which meant that the SANSA, they said that there were no other alternatives but to accept the implementing partners and the service providers. And we thought that the reason was not justifiable. SANSA had to go and do some groundwork and make sure that this procurement was done in a manner that is fair and that is transparent. Then the fourth one, Chairperson, is the Department of Works and Infrastructure, where they implemented one deviation to appoint Akibus SA to upgrade and enhance and complete the integrate their ERP modules for the department. And Akibus is the solution owner with the greater understanding for the system. Again, National Treasury did not support the request because the department at that point in time failed to submit the required information for National Treasury to adequately and sufficiently conduct due diligence on the process. And the department did not submit all the required information to date. So National Treasury did not support that deviation. Lastly, the deviation was, and in the top five is Department of Employment and Labour, which consists of a deviation to appoint Inkosi Albert Luthuli International Convention Centre to host the fifth global conference in the eradication of child labour from the 16th to the 22nd of May for the total amount of 45 million. We conditionally supported this deviation because the method that was used to identify the preferred venue, we could not determine the fairness and the transparency, and the department had not yet at that time assessed the reasonableness and the market relatedness of the price. Therefore, we supported on condition that the basis that the ICC was that was selected as a venue for the conference was structured in a manner that is fair and that is and transparent, and that the Department of Labor assessed the cost effectiveness of the conference in itself. So in a high level, those are the biggest contributor, Chairperson, on the 3 billion that you see in the top 20 of the deviations that were implemented in closing of Instruction Note 3 of 2016-17. Next slide. And Chairperson, the same process that we did for the deviations, we did for the contract modifications. We had in total within that period a number of 51 contract modifications that amounted to a total of 2.5 billion. And the top 20 that we have identified constitute 76% of the total expenditure, and not constitute 99.9%. Basically, almost 100% of the total expenditure that you see on the slide. But in terms of numbers, the top 20 constitutes 78% of the total number, so of the 51 requests for contract modifications that we received. Next slide. So we took the same approach, and you will see again, Chairperson, that out of the total expenditure that was spent, the top five take the majority of the 2.5 billion that has been spent through contract modifications, and with Eskom being the first in line with 1.6 billion, which is consisting of three requests for contract modification, which two are totaling just above the 1.6 billion, and the third one is just a small amount that was submitted for noting. The first one was Eskom was appointing Pilob Systems as an in-house developed software, which means that only Pilob staff had access to the source code to be able to maintain and support that system. Therefore, Eskom extended the contract for 5.6 million. That is the amount. We think that one of them is just in comparison of the other two, just the smaller amount. The 1.6 billion in itself constitutes of the second one, where Eskom was reporting that they had met the conditions of National Treasury in the modification of the contract with ARB Electrical Wholesalers. And therefore, National Treasury was only noting the conditions, only had to note the conditions that they had met. And then Eskom, on the second one or the third one, they had requested to modify a contract with Petro SA for the supply and delivery and offloading of petrol and diesel to various Eskom coal-fired power stations for the amount of 1.6 billion, which National Treasury then supported. The second one was for SARS in a tune of 306 million, consisting of seven requests. The first one was a contract expansion for renewal of licenses and maintenance and support for the enterprise content management system, which is a document and Captiva system. National Treasury supported the contract modification for continuation of the usage of the system. The second one was the expansion of scope with Upswitch Limited for the biometric services from the date of approval till 30 June in the amount of 120,000 Chairperson. The National Treasury supported the contract modification, Chairperson, because the tender process, again, on this process had to be instituted, and SARS was in the process of implementing that particular tender process, Chairperson. The third one was the price adjustment or price expansion of an existing procurement with Dell of Dell High Specification Desktops and related services to SARS Forensic to include 20 hard drives for the desktop to be fully functional. The original contract for that was 739,000 chairperson, then with an additional amount of 225 that was added onto that contract chairperson as part of the modifications. Then there was an extension of a lease agreement for SARS with SARS and Delta Property for an amount of 60 million chairperson from 1 June 2022 to 31 May 2027. Chairperson, you would note that the leasing or the accommodation challenges for government chairperson in terms of following the competitive bidding process poses extra costs, and organs of state always constantly have to assess whether they have the ability to move to a new accommodation and have funds to invest in tenant installation, and therefore the impracticality of following a tender process is always considered. And therefore, where in this case it is impractical due to the financial constraints, the audience of state and SARS in this case continue being accommodated in the building that they are currently being housed in. And that is the same circumstance with the next one, which is also a lease agreement, but this time around with Vividend Income Fund for the office accommodation at the Trescon building. But now this would be at the amount of 208 million and then there's other two chairperson, which comes to about 29 million, and I'm trying to move faster, Chair, in the interest of time, to make sure, because there's other sections that needs to be presented as well, which take a further 29 million from SARS, as well as another 4.2 million that were then requested for Treasury, and Treasury supported them. Then the last one, the third one, chairperson, is the South African Post Office for 153 million, which consists of two requests, which both are with conditionally supported, where the first one is to extend the contract with the Fidelity Cash Solution for SASA Cash Pay Points. So for a total amount of 136 million chairperson, National Treasury approved with the conditions as provided chairperson. And then the next one is the extension of a contract for domestic air cargo services for DOSEX for a period of 6 months in the amount of 850,000 rand chairperson. National Treasury supported the extension, however, as I've mentioned, with conditions, as SAPO had maintained that a new RFP could not be advertised due to National Treasury's instruction that was issued on the 25th of February, that there were no new tenders to be advertised, and that relates to the Concord judgments that related to the preferential procurement regulations in February 2022. Number four then being the Department of Transport, with two contracts being modified, a contract to Business Connection at a total cost of 142 million. Business Connections was appointed to allow for the smooth transition of the cost back asset. Yes, Chairperson.
Please pick up your feet. You are on injury time already.
Okay, Chairperson. So I think let me skip the details, Chairperson, because as I've mentioned, we have provided this information through the folder that we submitted in terms of the deviations and contract modifications insofar as the old instruction note is concerned. And I move specifically, Chairperson, to the next slide, which is now the presentation or the summary of deviations in terms of the new instruction note, but still related to the same quarter, Chairperson, but now the different timeline, because now we are focusing from the 1st of April up until the 15th of June 2022. What is critical to note at this point, Chairperson, is that at this point, these deviations are no longer coming to National Treasury for approval. They are being reported by the organs of state. Therefore, the amount of access to information, the amount of assurances that a National Treasury can provide is after the implementation of those particular deviations. We have focused on top 10 in this case because top 10 of the total number of deviations that have been reported to National Treasury for this period, which is 167 transactions, constitute 91% of those deviations in value, but then also constitute 77% in the number of deviations.
Ms. Baker, just a minute. So just to make sure that we are on the same page, what you presented before, right, what you are presenting now, that just please tell us what's the difference again. What you see, now you're starting something new.
Yes. The difference is that the ones that presented before, in terms of instruction notes, are requests that came to National Treasury for consideration for approval for those deviations and contract modification. The ones I am presenting now are
and
the
that,
ones...
For the first quarter.
Yes.
Right.
But the days in the first quarter for those ones is the 16th of March up until the 30th of March. Now, these ones that I'm presenting right now are for the first quarter, but from the 1st of April up until the 15th of June in terms of the new instruction notes.
Okay.
And therefore, when they come to National Treasury, they come in the form of a report. They are no longer a request for approval. So for these ones, National Treasury was not involved in the process of their implementation. They are only they are only reported after the fact.
So the 5.5 billion rand was what you approved. It's 3 billion and 2.5 billion rand.
Yes.
So 5.5. What you approved in Q1 2022-23.
Not necessarily approved, Chairperson. Was providing the details.
Okay.
The submission, the total submission that came. Let me put it that way.
Yeah.
Because some we approved, some we didn't approve.
Okay. I'll continue then.
Thank you. And then these are the ones that have been approved by the accounting officers and therefore are being reported to National Treasury. And we can go to the next slide. And then in terms of the top 10, using the same principles, Chairperson, we saw that for deviations for this period that was reported to National Treasury is a total of 228 million. With AEMFC being the first one on top with the 114 million. And I will not go to the details, Chairperson. We can go through the detail in the interest of time later on, Chairperson. But the information has also been provided in the form of spreadsheet where we have assessed and analyzed and provided comments what exactly these transactions were for and whether, in our view, we think that those transactions were justifiable in the manner that they were implemented or they were not. The second one being CIPC, and then the DALRRD, and the South African tourism faring through in the top four, Chairperson, and taking the majority of the 228 million that is reported. Next slide. In terms of numbers, you can see that the profile changes a little bit because in terms of numbers, we found that out of the 112 deviations that were reported to National Treasury within that period, 38 were coming from the NRF, with 21 coming from CEDA, and MINTEC coming with stating there. That will show you that the AEMFC, as you see, is not even in the top five in terms of numbers, but in terms of value, they are the highest, meaning that with that little number, the expenditure, the biggest expenditures that were spent through, or the highest expenditure that was spent through deviations in the quarter one, according to the report, would have been AEMFC chairperson. Next slide. And then in summary, chairperson, what we have presented is provided AEMFC has only six, but they have the highest deviation in expenditure. So this is just to show how the numbers can demonstrate challenges within an organ of state in terms of implementing procurement processes, but does not always relate or rather result in high expenditure, but those that you find that there's a fewer number of deviations.
Sorry, somebody is not muted. Please, can you please mute so that you allow the presenter to continue? Somebody is interfering with the presentation. Please just make sure that your gadgets are muted. Sorry, ma'am. Continue. No.
Okay, Chairperson, we can move to the next slide. And then when it comes to contract modification, Chairperson, same principles, because if the old instruction note, again, required that within the set threshold, the requests come to National Treasury. But these ones, there are set thresholds within the new instruction note. However, the set thresholds are prescribed that the accounting officers and the accounting authorities then report to National Treasury the contract modifications that have gone above those set thresholds. We received a total number of 68 reports for contract modification in the new instruction note for quarter one. And the top 10, again, in terms of the contract modification, constitutes 97% in terms of expenditure for the contract modification. But in numbers, they only constitute about 66%. Again, it demonstrates what I've already said previously on the deviations, to say that the transaction in numbers may be lower, but they have high impact in terms of the expenditure, and therefore high numbers do not always result in high expenditure, and the other way around. Next slide. And then this is the profile that we have insofar as the contract modifications are concerned. We have a total expenditure of 278 million, and the top 10 institutions are provided in this slide with DOJ and CD as the highest expenditure with 127 million, and SANRAL with coming next with 51 million, SARS following, and ISACA following, with SARS being almost 40 million, and ISACA with 15 million. Chairperson, next slide. Please run the diagram. Thank you. So in terms of the contract modification, we have a similar profile coming through as the deviation. Department of Justice is right at the top with the expenditure of 127 million, but they only have one application, or rather one contract modification that they implemented. And Chairperson, as we move along with the discussions, we can provide the details of exactly what those contract modifications were for in terms of the summary that we have done for the committee, and what our views are on the contract modification. And then following with the SANRAL with the 51 million, again, only one. But if you look at the CCMA, second bottom in terms of expenditure, but in terms of number, they are 27 transactions that were related, I think, to leases and things like that. Next slide. and next to the next one as well. Next slide. And in this section, Chairperson, we did a comparison to say, in the old instruction note, what did the quarter one look like? And what did quarter one of 2022 with this change look like? And we noted, Chairperson, that the comparison may have a little bit of dynamics and may not be 100% related, simply just because quarter one of 2022 has got a portion that was based on the old instruction note and a portion that is based on the new instruction note, while the one quarter one for the previous financial year, it's based on the old instruction note. But it was very important for us to do this comparison to check, Chairperson, how we are faring through in terms of the deviations and the contract modifications when the powers have fully been handed over to the accounting officers and accounting authorities to approve the deviations, because we expected that then the accounting officers and the accounting authorities with the new instruction notes should be able to move faster and implement procurement processes faster, to be able to deliver on services much more faster. So unlocking the bottlenecks and making sure that we implement things easily. But Chairperson, as I've provided, you will see that the numbers within quarter one and quarter two are different, because in quarter one in the previous year, we looked at a total of a top 20. In the new quarter, we couldn't even get to top 20 because the numbers by themselves were not enough to even get to the top 20, because the top 10 in itself constituted 99.9% of the total population. So this is almost everything within the new quarter. But even in expenditure, you see, Chairperson, 5.5 billion in quarter one versus the 228 million leaves some telling tales, such as possibility that the organs of state that could have implemented deviations and contract modifications but does not necessarily report to National Treasury, issues of non-compliance. However, but it could also be a possibility of they did not implement any deviations in that period for whatever the reasons, Chairperson. But as you see, what we've noted as well is that the typical institutions that would appear in the top 20 of the old instruction note in terms of quarter one do not appear, a lot of them do not appear in the top 10 of the new deviation. So this comparison for us was quite critical to sort of try and see what the data that we have is showing us could be the possibility of what is happening within the environment, Chairperson. And I will go through the details of what we've then done and what we're doing with it, Chairperson, and as I move along the slides, because it has got a number of possibilities, because the transparency of the process insofar as the involvement of National Treasury in the quarter, in the new instruction note is no longer there. And therefore we can only receive the completeness of the report becomes questionable, and we have to find mechanism to close around the completeness of whether all the audience of state that ought to have reported to National Treasury and the Auditor General have done so? Or is it a matter of timing where they have reported or they are reporting, but it's late? And we will talk to those issues a little bit later on, or they are just not reporting at all, Chairperson. Next slide. The next slide again. So again, if you look at the contract modification, we have we had 15 billion in the quarter one of the old instruction note, and then in this new instruction note, we have 278 million. So again, the issues, as I've mentioned before, are coming across in the contract modifications as well. The typical institutions that came up in the profile in the old instruction note do not feature in the new instruction note a little bit more, and I will unpack a little bit later on what's assuming to be the challenges within the organs of state. Next slide. Next one again. So the question then becomes, what is it that then we do to monitor as National Treasury? And what have we seen, at least with the little time? Because in terms of quarter one, Chair, if you have looked at the date, for the new instruction note, there's only about 2.5 months.
Mistaken.
Chairperson?
Mistaken. Just hold. I must come in. Now let me extend the whole presentation of OCPO. That by 8:30, you guys must be done, right? Because we want also to interact with your presentation, right? So that it doesn't just become a monologue from your side. You must also get us. So I'm then saying now, we're supposed to have finished by latest quarter two, and we're already at quarter past. Mendo, your whole presentation is expected to be done by 8:30. So please manage time, avoid too much detail. We look at this thing from a strategic point of view. Okay. Okay, please.
I will summarize, Chairperson, and make sure that then I move so that we have a little bit more time for the last part of the presentation, Chairperson, and state that what we do with the information that is reported, Chairperson, is to engage with the organs of state and out of the top 10 that we've identified, request for the specific information, assess the information, and make a determination whether the transactions were justifiable or not. Furthermore, Chairperson, is to identify the high-risk areas where we are going to go to the organs of state, and where appropriate, especially for the high-value infrastructure kind of transactions, actually conduct site visits and engage the organs of state to identify what are the challenges and what are the risks and what are the causes of these contract modifications and deviations. Chairperson, we can move to the next slide. I've already mentioned on this, Chairperson, we can move to the next slide. So the verification process that we follow, Chairperson, is intended to then monitor and curb the abuse in the SEM system and ensure that there is effective governance in the procurement system and make sure that we then, as National Treasury, implement a support plan that is directed and targeted to where the high risks and the challenges have been identified. Next one, Chairperson. And the next part, Chairperson, is a summary again of what the committee requested to see, what the profiles of the companies that benefited from the deviations in terms of quarter one. And we can quickly move to the next slide, where we have provided, Chairperson, that out of the expenditure that then has been spent on the deviations, Chairperson, and the charts they provide the spend or the break in spend according to the imperatives, whether it's Black owned, whether and how much has gone to women and how much has gone to youth. And we've done that in two ways. We've done that in terms of expenditure that has been spent, but we also did it in terms of the number of deviations that were provided. But also, so in the next slide, Chairperson, I will, because for the interest of time, take it that it has been read, Chairperson, and leave my presentation at that to manage the time. Chairperson, thank you.
Your next presenter, Ms. Lendo.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Matebula. Can you present just 5 to 10 minutes? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair, and the honorable members of the committee. I greet you. My name is Willie Matebula. I'm actually responsible for the procurement policy within the branch OCPO. If we can just go back to the I think page 24, just the presentation after transversal contract. I'll take 5 minutes and then I'll be done. Yes, this one, just move. The question was, what we do, of course, to support the reconstruction and recovery plan of the state. You know that we always do this through policy interventions. And the current policy interventions that we have are through the PPPFA, you know, and of course the public procurement bill that we currently have. Now, if you look at this first page, it just gives a history, Chair, of a matter that I believe you are familiar with, the court, SCA Concord, and the judgment declaring on the PPPFA the regulations of 2017 as invalid, but not unlawful. They were invalid in the sense that they were ultra vires to the Act itself, as well as perhaps the challenging the powers of the minister to prescribe the framework for preferential procurement. So this is just the history on that slide, and I don't think I need to go into that in detail. In the interest of time, we can just move to the next one, the next slide. This is obviously basically summarizes what I've just said. The Constitutional Court has declared these regulations invalid, but the invalidity has been suspended until 16 February 2023. So that's currently the regulations will apply, by the way, by all organs of state, and that has been confirmed, of course, by the Constitutional Court. Now you can just move to the next one, next slide. Well, the implications of that judgment simply means that the offending provisions in the regulations of 2017, you know, have been removed in the revised, you know, PPPFA regulations of 2022, and those offending provisions, according to court, were the subcontracting as well as localization, you know, which was meant to support industrialization, and also issues around the transformation, the BE provisions, which were also encapsulated in those regulations. So these were offending, according to court. They were ultra vires the Act, and therefore they had to be taken off in the new regulations. That's basically what it means. However, the 80-20 and the 90-20 still remains, according to court. And that just gives that background. Can you just go to the next one? This simply says, you know, post the clarification by the Constitutional Court on the suspension of the invalidity to next year in February, the Treasury then started to draft new regulations and on the PPPFA, and that process is almost you know, completed. These regulations support, the new regulations are supposed to go to state law advisor during this month of September, and we also expect that the minister would promulgate the new regulations of the PPPFA, which will hold PPR 2022. Just move to the next one. I'm just moving, Chair. As indicated, of course, offending provisions were removed. They talked to localization, transformation issues around BE, as well as subcontracting have been taken off in the new regulations. As indicated, these regulations are ready. You can just move to the next slide. I'm just moving chair in the interest of time. This just gives the status of where we are. The new regulations are done internally, and now what needs to happen is the chief state law advisor would vet them legally, and upon completion of that process, then the minister would be ready to promulgate, hopefully during September, to allow enough time for the rolling out of the new regulations, which must take effect at least in January next year. So you can just move to the next slide, please. Thank you. Then the one other issue, Chair, is the procurement bill. I know maybe previously it has been presented to you. There are provisions in the bill, of course, that deal with a number of issues, which would talk to issues of transformation, because one could always argue and say, you know, where does the decision of the Constitutional Court leave issues that are so critical in this country, socio-economic objectives and other policy objectives of government? And of course, the bill does take into consideration those issues. And we hope that you can just move into the next slide. This slide just presents what exactly would be contained in that. Now, Chair, this is just talks to the progress you know, to date. There is a NEDLAC process, which was, of course, started between all social partners at NEDLAC in May. Currently, the process of NEDLAC is ongoing, but we hope that at least by end of September, this is a new date, because the original date has been missed, by the way, at NEDLAC, by 30th of September. That's what our agreement with social partners this week. This bill would be then completed from NEDLAC, and post that bill, this slide simply provides what are the next steps after we've completed the processes of NEDLAC. Of course, there are some issues. Up to now, we've dealt with 6 of the 7 chapters of the bill. But of course, there are some chapters that we still need to visit, and also some other issues that we need to revisit for refinement, including issues around recommendations of the Commission of Inquiry and so on. That's basically where we are, Chair. So, but our plan is that come March next year, all things being equal, Chair, and I must emphasize all things being equal, the bill should be, at least tabled in Parliament. That's what our plan up to now. So if you can just move to the next slide. I think the next slide should be the last slide, if I'm mistaken. Well, this one talks to the interventions, of course, around the economic reconstruction and recovery plan, which deals specifically with issues of infrastructure procurement, which is a very big part of our procurement spend in the country, local government and many other departments that are dealing with infrastructure and so on. So this slide simply provides that kind of insight into, but obviously all these things are going to be catered for in the bill, or let me say they are catered in the bill. And then the NEDLAC process, of course, is making sure that infrastructure plays a critical role so that monies do not, get returned to the fiscus, to the National Revenue Fund, simply because our processes are somehow cumbersome. So that's basically what this is all about. Okay. The next slide is just a continuation on what I've just said now on what our role is going to be going forward insofar as this one. Then last slide, Chair, is just to thank you. That's the end of my presentation. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Materuna. Thank you to all the newspaper, and then Ms. Lendo for the presentation. Honorable members, you know how we do it. Can I have indications of the oral members who would like to interact with the presentation? Honorable Lenzana.
Honorable Sirupin, please, Chair.
Honorable Sarupin.
Matafa.
Honorable Matafa. Any other honorable member would like to come in? Honorable members? Okay. Let me go with the with these honorable members for now. Honorable Lenzana, please go.
Good morning, Chairperson, and good morning, colleagues. Good morning, Team Treasury, the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer. Chair, perhaps let me switch off the video because of connectivity. At least now you have seen that you are not talking to the robot. Can I?
Yes, we can vouch for that. We are talking to Honorable Lenzana, so you can switch off the video.
Thanks, Chairperson. Chairperson, let me welcome the presentation by the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer. Just three issues, Chair. Two are related. Perhaps let me start with this first one, which is not related to the others. On transversal contracts. What are the perceived disadvantages? When I'm talking perceived disadvantages, I've chosen a word, Chairperson, deliberately, because other organs of state may see disadvantages whilst the Chief Procurement Officer doesn't see such disadvantages. Then the second one also around this is there no element of reluctance by some organs of state? It relates to what I've just asked, Chair. And then also, if there is reluctance, these questions are intertwined, Chair. What could be the reason advanced for such reluctance in terms of participation by other organs of state? Then the second one, Chair, is on deviations. Even these, as I've said, Chair, there would seem to be two questions, but to one on deviations. Is there some or a definite risk management within the office? The second, which is also related, is are you able to pick up artificial conditions for emergency situations or urgent cases? If yes, how? Also with the question of the perpetual offender, the serial offenders, how do you deal with them? But now also on the implementation, on this question, Chair, which you digged out during the course of the presentation. Deviations implemented before approval, which of course we were schooled on this when we came into Parliament in this term by the office, and we understood. But let me ask this. Is there no malicious compliance here, where people would do whatever and in whichever way, knowing that after all, we've got this side room which we can always use of saying, yes, we will submit reports after we have done whatever. On the balance, Chair, in terms of rand and cents, how huge is this amount that we are talking about? I'm talking now of these deviations which were not applied for and approved, but implemented before approval, versus those deviations which go the normal route. On the balance, which is more than the other? It goes back to that question of malicious compliance that I was talking about. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Mlenzana. Please, Honorable Sarupian Kani.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chair, I just have a couple of simple questions. The first is with regards to these slides on transversal contracts. We've seen from CETA, the State Information Technology Agency, that transversal contracts have often locked departments into solutions that are later found to be unsuitable and cause all sorts of problems. So I'd like to understand the rationale for pushing transversal contracts in this presentation and why the Chief Procurement Office seems to think it's a good thing, when we've also seen how it can be used, particularly at municipal level, when municipalities piggyback off each other's contracts to allow single corrupt contracts to spread across multiple municipalities as well. So that's the first question. The second question then relates to deviations. And what I would like to understand is, what due diligence does National Treasury do when they receive deviations, particularly on the companies that would benefit from these deviations, to make sure that there is no corrupt intent to deal with these things? And when they do find any attempted corruption in deviations, I'd like to know if they've ever detected any, and if so, what remedial actions are taken? And then just with regards to the conditions for deviations, what remedial actions are taken if the department is granted deviation with conditions, but then doesn't comply with the conditions? Thanks very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Sarupen. Honorable Matapa.
Thank you very much, Chair. Good morning, Chair. Good morning, the Office of the CPO and the team. Let me join those that have welcomed the presentation from the office. It's really informative and empowering. Chair, maybe the point that I would like to start with is almost similar to the one that Honorable Sarupen concluded with, where conditions are granted for deviations. Now, this question, Chair, is motivated by the developments happening in the city of Tshwane, where, even though I don't have the veracity of whether the audio clip that was heard was indeed the mayor, but in the clip, the mayor indicates that on an unsolicited basis, comments should be sought from Treasury. And once Treasury has given those conditions or comments, the city can decide whether to comply with those remarks or not. So my question there is, if whether that is accurate, and if it is accurate, what is then the purpose of giving remarks that are not binding? Because my view would be that in order to safeguard the national purse, Treasury remains the ultimate custodian, and their remarks should somehow have the binding effect. So I just wanted clarity on that one. If
Ormatafa, please switch off your video. We've lost you. Darren?
Chairperson? Yes, Chairperson?
Did we lose Honorable Matafa?
I think we lost Honorable Matafa. He's no longer on the...
I'm back, Chairperson. Please. In this instance, can I be allowed maybe to switch off my video?
Yes, that's what I was proposing.
Thank you very much, Chair. Chairperson, I was still on slide 10, and there my bone of contention is that the slide, as much as it is helpful, the only difficulty that it creates is that it compares the top 20 in the financial year 2020 and 2021 against the top 10 in 2022-2023. So it is rather difficult for one to be able to draw an inference to be able to say indeed there's an improvement or there is a regression. As such, I would like maybe to be clarified if whether according to this comparison, is there an improvement based on these two comparative time frames of comparison? The second point, on slides 73, 74, and 75, which deals with the profile of beneficiaries of state procurement, my interest there is to find out if whether there is strict measures that are put in place to be able to identify and determine the degree of fronting practices. We know this has been always a bone of contention, that as much as government has good intentions of empowering and uplifting certain sectors of society, they'll only be put in front, but whereas the control and ownership is by those that have been previously advantaged. And the last one, Chair, which is on slide 74 again, is a bit of a concern as well, where it indicates that women constitute only 6% of participation in state procurement processes. For me, it's a clear indication of a very low pace of women empowerment in the country, even despite it being a clear government commitment, to a point that the president would have indicated that the state being the biggest spender should lead the way in terms of ensuring that women are empowered and are uplifted out of economic exclusion. Because once they are deep in that particular space, they become vulnerable to society, they become vulnerable in their own space, and the issues of GBV becomes acceptable given their vulnerable state. I'm just interested, how best can the office support this particular campaign of ensuring that women actually participate in the space of procurement? And Chair, this is not only at national level. I happen to come across a report from one of the municipalities in Gauteng. It's the same case. In certain categories, women only account for 4% of procurement, and that is a point of concern for us. And I just wanted maybe to find out if whether is there a way that this particular situation can be corrected and that all sectors of society find a meaningful expression in the economic life of the country. I will pause there, Chair. Thank you very much, and my apologies for my poor connectivity. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Matasa. Any other Honourable member on the platform, I would like to say something. Honourable Nzana, is there something that came to your mind, Honourable Sarupen, before I come in?
No, thanks, Chair. I think I've been covered by the other members.
No, thanks, Chair. I'm also covered.
Thank you. Perhaps let me join the oral members in thanking the team led by Ms. Mendo for the presentation. Perhaps let me start where Oral Matafa ended. The impact and the effect of apartheid in South Africa was most felt by women, especially Black women. If we talk about emancipation of women, we can't deal with that without dealing with their economic situation. So as government, we want to be in the forefront of doing that. And the office of the OCPO and National Treasury would like them to come back to us with a very focused approach as to say how we're going to make sure that that happens. The figures that are being shared here are very disappointing to say the least. When you spoke about the oppression of women, you spoke about the oppression of women in this country, trying to say that there is no way we'll say this country that we are liberated before we deal with the triple oppression of women. I think I just wanted to underline that, and we definitely would like a focus from yourself and National Treasurer in ensuring that women are being economically uplifted. A related question, how closely do you work with the Black Economic Broad-Based Empowerment Commission for National Treasure? And what strides do you think we're making as a country, especially as far as using public procurement in trying to deal with the legacy of economic exclusion of the majority of the people of this country? I'm starting at the tail end. I see there's a process of the bill, but again, there's also a process of regulations. Obviously, we haven't seen the regulations, but the main thing around those regulations was about the courts saying perhaps the powers that the minister through the regulation they were was using are not supported by the legislation. I'm putting it very simply. Firstly, is that a good understanding? And two, the regulations that are going to be coming up, how do they then take care of that? But having said that, Mr. Matebula, one thing that we're insisting on is that the public procurement bill should be very unequivocal and very clear about the using of public procurement for economic exclusion to deal with a decade of economic exclusion. Should be very clear that because if we miss it, then we were in trouble. Obviously, in the past about three decades since 1994 now, the legislation hasn't helped us a lot. To the PFA, and with their 2080 rule and their 90-10 rule, definitely they didn't help us. That's why, as we're talking today, Black people are still on the margins of the economy. This committee approves a budget, 2 trillion rand, 2.157 this year. In the MTF is about 6.6 trillion rand. But we are saying without any fear of contradiction that apart from the social goods, when it comes to Black business, they are definitely not benefiting from this. So the bill, which will come before Parliament, should be very unequivocal about the desire of this government to use public procurement to try and deal with the legacy of economic exclusion of the majority of people of this country. Related to that, I think we've identified public procurement as an important lever to achieve localization, economic transformation, and ERP in general. So the question that we have tried to answer it, but listen to my question. How do you see this happening, and what do you see the role of OCPO in this regard? Two, which departments do you think must pioneer and lead in localization, economic transformation, and ERP, and why do you think those departments have got a better potential to lead? Another question, what is the downside This is following on what Honorable Linda and Honorable Saropen raised, just saying, what is the downside of central procurement, if any? Next question, what is the involvement of broad-based technical empowerment in your top four value commodities? How do you use this to promote the involvement of township and rural entrepreneurs? Next question. Your office, it doesn't worry you that one company will procure goods and services to the value of 1.6 billion rand, deviating from the normal SVM policies, the deviations I just spoke about. I'm saying that because for many years, Eskom has been the biggest contributor to deviations and modifications. Shouldn't deviations be an exception rather than a rule for companies? And my worry is that some of the companies will just disregard all the SVM rules that we come up with and decide to procure goods and services without following the SVM rules, but also the laws which are passed by this parliament. And I must say that Eskom for many years, I remember in 1 year, was a year when there was about 36 billion rand deviations, and about 32 billion rand of that came from one company that was Eskom. Then I think this is the last one. What is the biggest risk with these deviations, especially in relation to the second instruction note as said by Ms. Dick? Ms. Mendo and your team, please attend to the questions. You'll only bring back the meeting to me once you have answered all the questions. Thank you. We'll decide who answers what.
Thank you, Chair, Honorable Chair, and Honorable Members. I think the colleagues will answer, but let me just talk through the issues that relate to the instruction note, the current instruction note 3 of 2022, and the old one. I guess we are in a sort of a dichotomy because the act, the PFMA had envisaged that the managers would really manage your accounting officers, your accounting authority. And I think when we look at what has happened in the past in terms of the previous instructional trail 16-17 and the current one, can actually see that since that time, it's only now that we are giving that power to the institutions. But the reality is sort of saying to what extent we are trying now in terms of making this presentation to share with the panel, to share with the committee rather, that there could be risks, and those risks, they emanate from reporting, hence we have got our top 20 and our top 10. And the issue that we're deliberating upon, it could be issues that relate to completeness. But on the side of actually saying, how do we enhance, or how is delivery enhanced in us allowing the act, as the Act had said, that the accounting officers should be accountable, but also us in Treasury to have robust systems in terms of supporting. So we are in discussions in terms of having a robust support plan that would be able to support the various institutions would note that if you look at the deviations that have been really coming to Treasury, you would not even have the time to support and only look at the support in terms of the submissions that you are giving back to the entity. The second issue that I would wish to comment on, the perceived disadvantages. I guess there are perceived disadvantages, but in almost in some of the situations, you sort of say which is a better devil. And the issue is, if you look at the transversal contracts, you're also more benefiting in terms of economies of scale. And when the transversal contracts are done, in many instances, the various entities or departments, they do form part of the committee. So the perceived disadvantage could be the fact that entities or departments that are also out there, they have for their own. Hello.
Can you please have your video on?
Oh, okay. Oh, sorry, Chair. Sorry. Okay. Yes. I was still talking to issues that relate to transversal contracts, and you'd note that in terms of these transversal contracts, they at the moment are not mandatory, but institutions are able to really compare, because what is quite important when you deal with the issues that relate to transversal contracts, in many instances, you have also scanned the market to sort of say, yes, this is what the market is saying out there in terms of the price and how do we benefit. So there are benefits, there are these perceived disadvantages, being that I would want to do the procurement internally as that particular entity. But I'm still of the view that it is that approach is outweighed by the point of us wanting to get to transversal, to the advantages of transversal contracts. Reliance by organizations of state, in some instances, it would happen that themselves, they have got their own transversal contracts in some commodities, but the second issue, they could be reluctant precisely because they have got a system that they are working on. But I think colleagues would add on to that. But we have I think what is also very critical is for us to look at the transversal contracts that we're dealing with and compare with what the various organizations are using. Because if we're able to talk on the issues that relate to pricing and other elements, we'd be able to get many people onto the transversal contracts. But as we have seen the figures, at least entities and departments are able to use that. The issues that relate to deviations and the flight, I think Basani would deal with that. Does it not worry a company to be a biggest contributor? Should it be an exception than a normal task following the SCM rules? I think, yes, it does worry, but in many instances, when one looks at the framework of how did they, because there are frameworks that deal with when do you have to deviate and what would be the circumstances for you to really be deviating. And to a very great extent, some of the issues, not necessarily issues that you would not have foreseen in terms of the entities and even departments deviating. But what is interesting now in terms of the slides that we have put, we we are going to have interactions with the entities in terms of the support, more so that we have seen that it could be an issue of completeness, and also to see to it that to check with the entities, are they following some of the elements that relate to them having the designation. So if I may talk to the issue of the 1.6 billion, yes, it does worry. And why does it worry? Would we not have foreseen that? And how do we manage it? It is exactly this support plan that we are going to have, or we are to embark upon with the various entities, because now we are able to see the figures and we are able to see what is it that has happened. Yeah. Thank you, Chair. I will come again if some of the questions have not been responded to. I will give over to Ms. Baker, and then I will give over to Mutushi and to Ms. Matebula. Thank you.
Thank you, CPO. Chairperson, I think I will touch on, there's just one aspect on the transversal contracting that I just want to touch on that we have seen as well, which is from a DMC perspective, Chairperson. The Honourable Member raised whether transversal contracts are actually, what is good or how are they good when participation onto contracts by other organs of state is utilized or used by municipalities, for example, to continue or to spread across corruption in different municipalities. And I think, Chairperson, it's important that we then understand the difference between the transversal contracting space and the process that they follow as from versus the piggybacking, the participation on a contract that has been established by an organ of state. And I think the one key define or difference between the two is that the transversal contracts, when they are implemented, the organs of state already prior to the tender have been invited to opt into the transversal contract. So the demand that a particular transversal contract, and maybe Mr. Mutushi will speak further on this, is well known prior to the implementation of the tender process, such that when the tender is implemented, it is known which organs of state have opted into that transversal contract, and it's not an afterthought, meaning, oh, there's this transversal contract, therefore we're gonna, no. They are known, and therefore they are implemented differently to participation and piggybacking. Chairperson, deviations, are there any malicious compliance there? Chairperson, there are compliance issues. How we have seen that there are compliance issues, when we did the comparison as part of the quarters between this year and the last financial year, we did a test where we sent the organs of state that appeared in the quarter one of last year but did not appear, and say, confirm whether really you have not procured through deviations and contract modifications, because from the reports, we don't have anything. And we found that some of them come back and respond and say, oh, no, sorry, we are a bit late, we're still following a process and so forth. So we then realized that there's non-compliance in terms of the timelines that have been prescribed by the instruction note, because some of the organs of state, especially the SOEs, the big ones, your ESCOMs and your Transnet, they find that the timelines to be challenging. And in fact, some of them communicated and said that we have a number of divisions amongst ourselves. We have 5-7 divisions that we need to consolidate. Therefore, the 14 days may not necessarily be practical for us. And we're trying to find a way to make sure that they then report in a manner that is practical but still complies with the prescript. The CPO has spoken to the issue of the due diligence and what we're going to do to make sure that we identify the instances of abuse and potential corruption and how we deal with it. But in instances where Chairperson, in the old instruction note where we have given provisional or conditional support, and the organs of state do not comply with the conditions. Organs of state, some of them do come back and say, this is what we have done to comply to your conditions. Do you agree? And we respond. Others don't, but those that did not, we have always closed the loop through the Auditor General's process. When the Auditor General audits the deviations and the contract modification, they actually do not even go on a sample basis. They audit the entire population. When they audit the entire population, where there are conditions, the Auditor General requires the accounting officers to demonstrate compliance with those conditions. And where the conditions are not complied with, the approval from National Treasury then is deemed not to be granted, and therefore would be non-compliant, and therefore the irregular expenditure that would have that would arise from those transactions would be irregular, and therefore the irregular expenditure framework needs to be followed. When you follow the irregular expenditure framework, you need to make sure that there's consequence management. You need to assess any loss to the state. You need to make sure that there was value for money and so forth, and make an assessment whether this is the money that should be recovered from specific individuals, whether it be officials of the state or the service providers, as well as disciplinary actions, and whether then a condonation process can be followed or not. So Chairperson, I think with that comment, Chairperson, I think I have, so you've also asked what is the biggest risk of deviations and contract modifications for the new instructionals. I must say, Chairperson, that deviations and contract modifications are not the norm. They are supposed to be utilized in exceptional circumstances. In the current instruction notes, we went a little bit further on because we then required accounting officers to upfront make a determination what are the procurement by deviation methods methods that must be adopted by their policy, because they must be adopted and approved within their policies. That's the first thing. But the second thing is that within that instruction note, we require them to adopt the circumstances within which those deviations and contract modifications can be applied, so that the playing ground is level, then we all understand exactly when and where. But also in their procurement planning and demand planning, organs of state must do adequate market research so that they understand the market and approach the market appropriately, so that we avoid the instances in an example that was provided, I think, by one of the honorable members, Chairperson, that how do we ensure that deviations are not used to fix failure to plan, failure to perform, poor performance, and things like that. And that is by making sure that all the items that would be procured through a deviation, for example, should have been substantiated through appropriate market and sufficient market research right at procurement planning stage, not when the procurement process has failed because the organ of state has failed or somebody has failed to implement the procurement process adequately. Chairperson, so the last matter I also want to respond to, Chairperson, is the question around the city of Tshwane. Chairperson, Section 113 of the MFMA prescribes how the municipality must deal with an unsolicited bid. In actual fact, it provides that it is not a must for a municipality to consider an unsolicited bid. However, when the municipality chooses to consider an unsolicited bid, they must do so in terms of within a framework which has been prescribed. And then Regulation 37 prescribes the framework within which these unsolicited bids are to be implemented. The Regulation 37 provides the conditions within which the unsolicited bids should be considered. It also provides the process. It requires the municipality to go and publish the decision to consider an unsolicited bid and get comments from the public. Post getting those comments from the public, they must make submissions to National Treasury. The unfortunate is that The framework only requires the municipality to consider National Treasury and Auditor General's comments in their decision making, and where they have not accepted or rejected the comments made by National Treasury or the relevant treasurer or even the Auditor General, to then communicate it back to the National Treasury. National Treasury does not have any powers in this case to enforce the municipality. It remains the responsibility of the accounting officers and the accounting authorities chairperson to account for the action that they take insofar as rejecting the comments that would have been provided by National Treasury. I believe I've addressed all the questions in addition to what CPO has already said, chairperson, so far as deviations and contract modification are concerned. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Thanks, Chair. I'm going to deal with the questions around transversal contracts. And I think over and above what the CPO has provided, I would like to touch on the first question that deals with the disadvantages of a transversal contract. I think we have outlined the advantages, and we could demonstrate that they far outweigh the disadvantages that we might have when we centralize commodities. However, some of the few challenges that would arise when you centralize or you over-centralize, like I put it in my presentation, is that you might find yourself that you take all strategic commodities and you put them in one place. And what that does in over a period of time is that you would have all the strategic commodities in one point. Therefore, organs of state, they don't get an opportunity to be involved in the procurement. So that might, to some extent, erode capacity in organs of state as far as procurement is concerned. So we are cautious of that element, that we don't take everything and at national treasury or even at provincial treasuries to the extent that organs of state, they have no role to play as well. And so one other challenge that might arise if we have central contracts is that, should you have challenges where these commodities are arranged, those challenges would, to some extent, impact on a multiple organs of state all at once. So the other question was dealing with what are the cited reasons for organs of state to be reluctant to be part of our transversal contract. And some of the reasons that are cited, institutions, they would like to do their own procurement process, especially provincial departments where they are of the opinion that because the contracts are arranged at the national level, so there's large interest that is drawn on the commodities, that their local suppliers don't get to get a chance to win those contracts. So local development it's one of those elements that I've cited to say will not be part of transversal term contracts. We would like to arrange these contracts at a provincial level, because if we do that, we then have an opportunity to empower the suppliers that are sitting at that particular province. The other question, I think touched on it to say, there's a difference between the arrangement of transversal term contracts and piggybacking. The arrangement of transversal term contracts is that when we go out on to the market, we go out with those specific organs of state that have indicated their interest in partaking in that contract, whereas piggybacking, it refers to where an organ of state would find any other contract that is arranged by another organ of state to just partake in there. So that contract, when it's arranged, was only arranged for one institution, but at the later stage that you find other institutions piggybacking on it. And I think also the question touched on the CETA transversal contracts. On this one, I would like to point out that there are commodities that are regarded as transversal that are arranged by National Treasury, and there are other commodities that are ICT related that are arranged by CETA. So what CETA does and what we do should be seen differently to what Medicare was trying to explain, that it is a piggybacking, so therefore it's different from what we have as transversal term contracts. Thanks, Chair. I think I've covered all the questions that relate to transversal contracts so far. And I'll let my other colleagues respond to the other questions. Thank you.
Chair, thank you very much. Let me just quickly, I'll be short as well, in response to some of the questions, just in addition to what my colleagues have already said. Look, I also want just to add something on this transversal contract. Just look at the criteria first, you know, before moving into the responding. Obviously, the rationale is based on the strategic nature of specific commodities to achieve government socio-economic objectives and other objectives, of course. You can take, for instance, the textile sector and say, if you look at what is happening currently in the country, the reality is we've got a lot of imports, you know, and these imports, of course, have got an impact on that particular sector. So then you would then say this particular sector is quite critical in achieving the socio-economic objectives and also just policy objectives of government. That's one. Two, the commodities must be cross-cutting in nature so that you then consolidate the volumes and you know, derive economic benefits out of economies of scale. And these are some of the justification for having the transversal contracts. I'm just adding to what they've said. Now, if one were to look at what would be the perceived disadvantage, and I know one of them would be the issue of over-concentration, especially if you compare the provinces. You've got rural provinces, and you've got urban provinces, and you've got also some semi-urban provinces, where if you look at the dynamics, the provinces themselves might want to kind of advance the local economic development of certain provinces. That could be some of the perceived disadvantages, including the possibility of creating monopolistic and oligopolistic practices in the market. So I'm just passing the chair. On this issue of Regulation 32, which is applicable in MFMA, local government, an equivalent of our own on 16A 6.6, is that the treasury regulations, that at least there was a cap up to now of that 20% and at least that 15%, the 20 million, 15 million. Hence, you know, the issues around deviation to say if you exceed that threshold, then you needed to come to treasury. But these measures were meant exactly to manage the risk of institutions abusing the SCM system by simply adding on an existing contract, you know, when in fact the contract was arranged for one particular entity. The other issue, Chair, the issues around practices. I had thought that this issue falls squarely within the purview of the BE Commission, because I think one of the responsibilities of that commission is exactly to deal with fronting. And then where fronting is found to have taken place, and then the commission should take the necessary steps to deal with those issues. However, it does not, of course, exonerate the involvement of the National Treasury. To also support where we pick up issues of fronting. But the serious issue in the country and it definitely defeats the whole agenda of transformation in the country. I'm not talking about this pseudo transformation. I'm talking about actual transformation that we're talking about, which is of course provided for in a number of pieces of legislation that this government has enacted since the dawn of democracy, the number of those pieces of legislation. And this is one of the issue, and I think there should be a stronger collaboration between ourselves as Treasury, as well as the BEE Commission, which is currently sitting under the wings of the Department of Trade and Industry. Now, Chair, and I take the point around the need to ensure that this bill, which we are currently busy with, takes into account issues of empowerment, you know, especially insofar as women are concerned. And I am happy that at least there are serious discussions at NEDLAC, which will look at this particular issue. Now, if you look at that chapter 4 of the bill, which deals with preferential procurement, there are a number of provisions there to say the framework that must be developed through this bill must, you know, look after women, youth, people with disabilities, even including issues of local industrialization, because that's what you want. Otherwise, you're having a problem in terms of job creation in this country, which is rife at the moment, and the employment opportunities. So we will unpack those particular chapters in the bill. I know that one of the biggest chapters, of course, that is still pending discussion at NADLEC, other than that, the one that deals with preferential procurement is a bill that deals with the entire system of the bidding system, the entire SCM system, including issues of modernization, innovation, strategic procurement, all these issues which are quite critical. And I guess we have to be deliberate in ensuring that we provide all the necessary provisions in that bill, and the hoping that at least we will be supported when this bill comes before Parliament, Chairperson. But we'll do whatever it takes from our side to ensure that this particular issue is addressed, as you correctly articulated the issues around. To address issues, and courts, took the decisions, but maybe correctly so, that in our drive issues of transformation, we may have overlooked the fact that the provisions that we made in the 2017 regulations, you know, could have been ultra vires, like issues of industrial procurement, which relates to industrialization to support the industrial policies of the country, including trade policies, well, issues around subcontracting, issues of transformation. But I guess these regulations, of course, will be an interim measure, pending the finalization of the bill. But the other critical issue, Chair, is that I think that given that we've removed the offending provisions as per the court decisions in the new regulations, and also the fact that the bill is not final as yet, we definitely need to find an instrument between ourselves and the relevant policy departments, I'm talking the DTI in this case, to see how do we, in the interim, ensure that issues around localization, local economic development, issues of empowerment through subcontracting, also find expression in the procurement process. Because I think it would be a big opportunity if we don't do that in the interim, the bill might take long, but then you can't ignore this. Now have been taken off from the revised regulations. They have been taken off. It's a fact. The regulations strictly are limited to issues that talk to preferences as provided for in the Act within that 80-20, and it's a cause for concern. But we will engage the DTI chair and see what instrument do we come up with in the interim to provide for this issue.
We're losing you, Mr. Machebula. When you go on the site, we lose you. So,
okay. Thank you, Chair. And the other issue, Chair, that you've raised is around which departments do we believe and what is our take? I think I've already given what our take is in terms of what we need to do as a country going forward, given the history of whether have we transformed through the policies that government has had over the years, then what departments? I would rather say, in fact, all departments are critical. Provinces are critical in this. And you can talk about, for instance, all the entities that fall within the ambit of public enterprises. You're talking Transnet, you're talking, you know, ESCOM and all those issues. Because if we lose that now, we must forget. I think it's an opportunity because we're talking about the bill. And this legislation, fortunately, is a new legislation. So we need to throw whatever kind of provisions in that bill to ensure that we address these issues. If we miss that, Chair, I don't know. Because we shall have missed an opportunity. It's a new bill, a new legislation. Let's do whatever it takes to ensure that issues. Thank you, Chair. Thank you for that opportunity. I think we are addressing those issues. We're aware of the concerns of the committee. We will address those. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mendo. Is there something to add?
Thank you, Chair. Just to latch on the issue of deviations, I think you'd note that even in our previous dispensation, there were, I think the question was sort of saying, does it not worry us? It does worry us. But what is important at the moment is to sort of say the current framework that we've got, it is also not very far from what we had previously. Yeah. I always forget to sorry, I always forget to put my face. I'm saying, Chair, I wanted to come to this question once more on the issue that relates to deviation that was asked, that the issue in this current instruction note, it is not very much different because still departments or entities would do so in cases of emergency and urgent situations. But what we are saying we are to do now, precisely because we do not have, there's no visibility, but it is more after the event than what used to happen in the past. In fact, even in the past, in the previous instruction notes, departments in cases of emergency, they were allowed to do those the divisions. So we do need to really look into that now that the accounting authorities, they are also doing that themselves and they report after the event. Can you see? Not only for emergency and urgent cases, but whether you have got other, they've got other divisions that they have, that they are doing. We are to work more with them because the strategy that we would wish to have to a very great extent does not necessarily relate to playing a situation of coming after the event is more of a supportive role and sort of saying, yes, we have analyzed in the last two financial years, this is the trend and it is continuing. Then the accounting office and accounting authorities in the institutions must take their rightful roles in terms of dealing with such issues. But also us as a treasury, we must have a plan that we could agree upon, not necessarily only in issues that relate to deviations, in terms of actually, because what is important now is to sort of say, there are systems within the institutions, but are they effective in terms of curbing such transgressions rather? Because you find that sitting in Treasury, how many entities do we have? How many departments do we have, municipalities? So it becomes important that where it matters most in the with accounting officers and accounting authorities, we could be agreeing on a plan. And it's not to sort of say it wasn't there, but there's more impetus that we should already be giving into that. So that, because if you look at our regulatory framework, it really wanted to give managers to manage. And at the end of the day, the management is not based elsewhere. So that's what we would wish to really get to. And we have got some of the reports, but we are of the view that there are certain instances where we didn't get the report, and it is not for us to say you have submitted or not submitted, but at the end of the day, how do we support you to get to that? And the boards of the various entities, what role do they play in the space that relate to accountability? So, because themselves, it's very clear in terms of the regulatory framework how they should be doing that. But ourselves, we need to really pay also our to not that we've not been paying it, but just to be more focused where it matters most and important, so that our strategy, we cannot drive our strategy by only us responding and being more reactive in such instances. We have been proactive, but I think the reporting line in terms of who reports to who, the interaction with the other state departments is also quite important, especially as in this issue of localization. We do need to have a clear program with the partners that we need to work on, which for me, I'm more towards an integrated approach and how we collaborate with our partners. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Chief Procurement Officer and the team. One of your responsibilities, which is written in white ink, is to advise the minister on procurement and procurement related issues. Do you agree? Even policy and so on, that there's people are in the forefront of the implementation of that policy. Would you agree with that statement of the Chief Procurement Officer? Mendo?
Yes, Honorable Chair.
Did you get my question?
Yes, I did get it.
And the answer is?
It's yes.
Okay.
We do. No.
Yeah, there's a reason why I'm raising that, and I'm happy we are agreeing. I'll tell you why. You see, the question of subcontracting, this thing of can we must subcontract. I'm not a big fan of subcontracting, because I see government taking its power and giving that power to a big company to start subcontracting. And if, for example, you said the company should subcontract 30%, why don't you decide, US government, that I'm giving this 30% to this a black company, women company, so that we are able to achieve, rather than outsourcing your powers to somebody else to do what you are supposed to do. Note that. Two, I was deliberately asking the question which departments should play a role in this localization and the BE and so on, and ERP. For me, the answer is the big spenders should be in the forefront of that because the impact will be big. I still don't understand why we import ARVs because we know that here in and out, as government, we are going to be needing ARVs, but they are private sector and so on, and we still import that. You could use that to stimulate local economies. Even going to towns, certain towns where you say this town is becoming a white elephant, let's establish a factory which is going to produce ARVs. You can import technology. This is not an issue. It's why these days are generics and so on, and you still spend so much money, and we still import some of these things. And our main assistance, we still import a lot of our stationery. We know that year in, year out, we are going to be buying stationery, but we still go out and import that from India. And you say that the price is cheaper. Yes, the price can be cheaper, but the social price may even be greater in terms of the jobs that we are exporting, in terms of the impact of that import on your GDP. Remember, your import spending, you say, it contributes negatively on your GDP equation. So why do you still do that, right? So that's what I'm talking about. That when you talk about price, you shouldn't be too myopic, right? We must look at the big, we've got the responsibility to the country to provide jobs, to make sure that we grow to the economy. So when you look at all those, so that's what I'm saying. It's very important that you, as people are in the forefront of this thing, also advise the minister on this case. This country, as it stands now, Mr. Matebula, produces trains, and that's high tech, the IP that's there and so on and so forth, technology that is being used in those trains, what is called the Stimela Sabantu. It was procurement that was used to establish the Donator factory in Ekurhuleni. Now this country, and there's a possibility of exporting trains to other countries if we do it properly. I wanted to give you that that bad cost, right? That is a case that you must look at what happened to the question of ensuring that black people get involved. I'm talking about the original contract. I don't know what form and shape it has taken at the moment. But one thing I can vouch for that today, using procurement, using government spend, we've got effect which employs people, which employs South Africans in a place which was very depressed, which is a borrow lane. Why can't we have some such things? So a chief procurement officer, can you just do that as your case study and see what happened around the tender? How did Prasa manage to get those trains to be Gibela, the Gibela, to produce trains in South Africa? But we still import pens, we still import these small things, we still import syringes, we still import ARVs and so on. In a context, we are saying that we don't have jobs. So these are the issues that for me are very important, that the way we deal with them in terms of advising the minister what is going to come out from the bill, we should have a lot of these denatol of these factories all over the country, because provinces are buying, national is buying, SOEs are buying and so on and so forth. So please go and look at that. But one thing I underline is this thing of subcontracting, where you are giving your own power as government to appoint black companies and so on. I don't think I'm a big fan of it. It's something that I would like you to look at it. That government should be the ones who's deciding through their procurement policies who they give those businesses to, rather than appointing a big company to say, black people should go and queue and parade in front of these companies as to who they pick and who they don't pick. And in most cases, you'll find that the objectives of government, the objectives of government are lost in the process. I hope you get my drift, and chief procurement officer. What we must do? We must be very deliberate. We must be very radical. We are saying we can't be sitting here and approving the budget of 2 trillion rand year in and year out, but black people are not benefiting. Women are not benefiting. Young people are not benefiting. Township economies are not benefiting. And we always come and sit here and approve budgets and so on. And this is the lever. Everybody else should follow us. I don't think there's any other institution which has got a 2 trillion rand budget every year to do, to use. And that excludes your SOEs. So that's very important that we be deliberate on this thing. Agreed?
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. Yes, agreed. We will be able to, when we come back, to have a report and a discussion on some of the issues, on all of the issues that we have actually raised. And they're quite important, and it's issues that as we have sort of said, we also dealing with when it relates to the bill, to sort of say to what extent would it really assist in the whole question of the modernization of the supply chain, and how do we get to do things differently and be more innovative in our approach. And yes, we will be, I think you were very specific in the issue. So when we come back, we would be responding to the specifics that you have mentioned. Okay.
Thank you so much. Team, Chief Procurement Officer, thank you very much for the engagement. And I'm happy you have also taken into consideration the comments made by the committee. And when we meet, let's be able to measure some progress. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Matebula.
Thank you, Chair.
Moifo, thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
Deka, thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
Yeah. Honorable Sheikh, how are you?
Good, Chair. I'm doing more of the listening. There's not much I can comment because All these things we've gone through again and again, but thank you.
Thank you for being on the platform. Honourable members, can we go to the minutes of the 24th of August 2022? They were sent to us, those minutes. Can I have the mover for the adoption of the minutes of the 24th of August?
I so move, Chair.
Mr. Taifa moves for the adoption.
Honorable
seconder.
Honorable second.
Honorable Marae is seconding the adoption of those minutes as a true reflection of that minutes. Thank you very much. The minutes are adopted. The minutes of the 26th of August 2022, they were also sent to us. Do I have a mover for the adoption of those minutes?
Matafa moves, Chair.
I have Honorable Matafa moving for the adoption seconder.
Chairperson, sorry, can I just check, was Mr. Matafa in the meeting on, he was not in the meeting on the 26th, Chairperson, so he cannot move, yeah.
Okay, sorry, or can I have a mover for the adoption of the minutes of the 26th?
Move, Chair, Kaiso.
Honorable Kaiso moves for the adoption seconder.
Marae will second.
Honourable Marae second for the adoption of the minutes. Thank you, honourable members. The minutes are duly adopted. Can we go to agenda item number 6? Do we have any announcement from you, Darren?
Chairperson, just a reminder about Friday's meeting with SANDF, National Treasury and Public Works on the follow-up on the oversight that we did in April, Chairperson, evolution of maintenance function. Thank you.
Honourable members, can I request that you just jog your memories about our oversight visit to the SNDF. So we then role players came up and there were things that you wanted to follow up on them. Darren, can you also share the letter or letters that we sent to different departments, the areas that you wanted them to concentrate on, because it's more of a follow-up to that oversight function before we finalize our report. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Darren. Honourable members, this brings us to the end of our meeting, and let's meet on Friday. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair.
Thank you.
Recording.